D-Radio Wissen. Hörsaal.
Mit Sibylle Salewski. Die Finanzmärkte bestimmen, wie wir leben. Das weltumspannende System von Geldflüssen, das kaum einer wirklich durchschaut, legt fest, wer reich ist und wer arm, wer sein Leben ändern kann und wer nicht. Die Finanzwelt ist das Herz des Kapitalismus. Und wenn sie in eine Krise gerät, dann gerät die Welt in eine Krise. Doch wenn dem so ist, wieso kümmert sich dann kaum einer darum, diese Welt zu regulieren? Warum engagieren sich so viele Menschen für die Umwelt und die Menschenrechte, für fairen Handel und Armutsbekämpfung? Aber nicht Regierungsorganisationen, die sich um die Finanzmärkte bemühen, die gibt es kaum. In dem Vortrag, den wir jetzt hier gleich bei uns im D-Radio Wissen Hörsaal senden, versucht der Politikwissenschaftler Jan A. Scholte genau diese Fragen zu beantworten. Schuld an dem fehlenden Engagement, meint Scholte, ist vor allem Unwissen. Denn dass mittlerweile Finanzströme und nicht der Handel mit Waren und Gütern unsere Wirtschaft bestimmen, das wissen viel zu wenige. Jan A. Scholte ist Professor für Politik und internationale Studien an der Universität von Warwick in Großbritannien. Sein Vortrag hat den Titel World Financial Crisis and Civil Society – Implications for Global Democracy. Scholte hat diesen Vortrag am 5. Juni 2013 am Käthe-Hamburger-Kolleg in Duisburg gehalten.
Why have commercial financial flows as a major force in contemporary society with a number of significant problematic, negative consequences attracted relatively little effective public interest response from civil society? Think about citizen activism in a more global world of today. Environmental activism? Big. Human rights activism? Big. Trade? Maybe not as big, but quite big. Humanitarian concerns, disaster relief, big mobilization. Financial markets, not the World Bank, financial markets, the commercial markets, very little. Why? So what am I going to do? Say a few things about finance in contemporary economy and society, why it's a huge force. Then review the civil society involvements in financial markets and to note that there aren't that many. Then ask why. And part of my why is going to say, well, look at the nature of the actors who were involved. But other part of my why is going to be look at the deeper ways that the global order is structured and organized. And then on the basis of that diagnosis, I'll end rather ambitiously for an academic by suggesting that we might actually do something. Okay, global financial markets. I just put up a few figures here because just to remember how big. Foreign exchange markets, $4 trillion per day. There will be another data coming out for April 2013, and they'll probably be higher again. Just think of the World Bank, which you probably have heard of, and think of all the civil society activism on the World Bank. If you take all of the loans that the World Bank has ever issued in the 65 years or so that it has been open, if you take the total value of all of its loans in 65 years, you get the equivalent to the turnover on the global financial markets of about 2.5 hours. Interbank transfers, so movements between banks, is $4.5 trillion per year. That means around 640 interbank international transfers for each person on Earth. You may have done one or two of them, in which case you know someone else is doing a lot more than you. Transborder security, so that's stocks and bonds that are being traded across borders, across countries. If you divide that number by the number of bodies on Earth, living bodies on Earth, then that comes out to about 83,000 euros per person. I suspect you haven't traded 83,000 euros in the past year, so someone else has been trading a lot more than you. Now, financial derivatives, if you take that number, then they're in terms of outstanding derivatives contracts, it's about $100,000 per person on Earth today. Again, that's probably not you. Big numbers. Big numbers, major influence, major force in contemporary economy and capitalism. Indeed, there is talk of financialization. You may have heard the phrase. But the suggestion with financialization is that there's actually a disconnect or an growing autonomy of finance from the quote-unquote real economy. Or rather, we probably have to rethink our notions of real economy because finance has become a reality in its own right. So if finance originally an economy was meant to provide the means for other economic activity, now a very large proportion, indeed the great majority of financial transactions, do not actually connect with the quote-unquote real economy at all. So if you take the total number of world exports, if you think foreign exchange dealings, yeah, so one currency is being traded for another currency, way back in the depths of time, you did this because you wanted to finance trade. As things were moving from one country to another, you traded currencies in order to have the currency to buy the import or the export in question. But now, if you take the total value of world exports at nearly $19 trillion per year, but the foreign exchange dealings per day are $4 trillion, you can see that most of the foreign exchange is not having anything to do with financing imports and exports. Financialization, in other words, the foreign exchange is being dealt as a market in its own right. And likewise, if you take gross world product, $77 trillion, per annum, if you add up all the GDPs of all the countries of the world, you end up with around 77, 78 trillion per year. The financial transactions, the value of the financial transactions is about 70 times that. So you're normally thinking about economy, that's about goods and services, the production, distribution, consumption of goods and services. That value is 77 trillion, but 70 times as much as that is actually financial transactions now. So this is a major, major, major aspect, quality, dimension of our contemporary economy. Now, we might just want to say those are interesting figures and then forget about it, if it weren't that some of these activities might have consequences that would be problematic. One of them is volatilities and collapses. If you look at the late 70s and 1980s, there was a major move towards liberalization of the financial markets. If you do a graph of financial crises through time, then in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s, you'll get hardly any bars coming up. But from the 1980s into the last four decades, you have Manhattan skyscrapers on your graph. So since this major growth of financial markets, we've had far more volatility, far more collapses. You'll have lived through a number of them, including the recent financial crises here. So that's one problematic consequence. There's a problematic consequence, unjust distribution. Now, there are many reasons why we have unequal distributions, but those of you who were here for Thomas Porges' lecture, Kate Hamburger lecture back in December, you'll remember he came up with some figures about the ratio of the top 5% of the world's population's wealth to the bottom 25% of the world's population. Well, since then, the latest figures have come out. If you take the top 5% and as a ratio to the bottom 25% of the world's population, the ratio is 245-1. And a good part of the reason why you have those inequalities, I think I would argue, is the workings of contemporary financial markets. Offshore accounts, illicit flows. More money has flowed from the global south to offshore than has flowed in ODA, many times more. More money has flowed from the global south to offshore accounts than is the debt of those countries. Taking just one part of the unjust distributions. Moral improprieties, by that I mean huge salaries, huge bonuses, rogue traders, all kinds of other questionable practices that come out of the industry. Ecological damages are a rather question mark, that a lot of this activity goes on without scrutiny or consideration or careful accounting of the ecological consequences of it. A number of financial activities fuel violent regimes, and it certainly is the case that if you look at the governance of these financial markets, it's highly, highly, highly undemocratic. If I do a little quiz of people here, how many know of the Financial Stability Board? Hands? Okay, I think that was about 5. You're a reasonably intelligent audience. Financial Stability Board is the main meeting point of the financial regulators today, internationally. And I would guess about 93% of this audience hasn't heard of it. That's a sign of the undemocratic governance. Huh? It's not because you're stupid, but it's all happening a little bit behind closed doors. Okay. The outcomes, I would say, if the outcomes haven't been happy, the outcomes haven't been happy because the rules aren't right. At least in part. The policies, the regulations, the institutions, the rules, the way you organize finance is yielding some of the outcomes. Different rules and different regulatory processes could steer financial markets to better outcomes. Finance has lots and lots of possibilities to do very, very good things. It has done across history and still can do in future. But it needs the rules and regulatory arrangements which will steer it to do those things rather than feed speculative bubbles and the like. Okay, so how do we get different rules and how do we get different regulatory arrangements? We might look to civil society, not only to civil society, we might also look to political parties and parliaments and so on and so forth. But this is global stuff, and we don't have global parliaments, we don't have global political parties, and there's a really question about who are the global actors or global networks who might actually get us mobilized so that we get different rules and different regulatory processes. This might be, at least in part, civil society. But my argument is going to be, it ain't been happening too much. And then the question is, why? Because if we understand why, then we have the basis maybe to make some things better. Civil society, if I can be an academic for a moment, we do have to define terms. And as you will find, everyone defines civil society differently. So this is not the truth. This is my conception of civil society, which I find intellectually and politically convenient for what I want to understand. And you can disagree, and that's fine. And if you don't disagree, then there's something wrong. Okay, but I take it to be a political space, so an arena, a realm where politics happens, where there are struggles, acquisitions, exercises of power. It's where associations, so it's people working in groups, of citizens, so it's people enacting their rights and obligations as members of a political community. It, for me, does not include political parties because civil society groups, for me, are not seeking to occupy office. And they are trying to shape societal rules implicitly, explicitly in some way. Okay, with this conception, civil society for me encompasses not just non-governmental organizations, which may come to mind for you in the first instance, NGOs, but it's also about faith groups, churches, mosques, other religious circles. It's about business forums, not firms, but chambers of commerce, banking associations, employers, federations, and so on. It's about labor unions. It's about professional associations, research institutes, social movements, including informal ones. Lots of stuff that could fall under that general definition, the political space where associations of citizens seek from outside political parties to shape societal rules. Okay, quickly, just to establish my point that not that much has been happening. Okay, actually, first I have to say quite a lot has been happening in one part of civil society, the business forums. The industry associations are doing very, very well in terms of being active on the regulation of financial markets. So the International Institute of Finance, the Institute of International Finance, sorry, the IIF, I'm not going to read all of these, but just these are global business forums of various kinds, the Association of Financial Markets in Europe, the International Chamber of Commerce, the World Economic Forum, the Davos people, and so on, national banking associations. These are very well funded, they're very present, the IIF has its headquarters across from the International Monetary Fund, and the managing director of one looks into the office of the other, not quite, but you know, they're quite close. Okay, but these are mainly promoting what we loosely call neoliberalist agendas in the sense of they're promoting liberalization, deregulation, and other rules which facilitate, maximally enable, and minimally constrain the activities of profit-seeking commercial finance. So lots of business groups going along. There is also economic policy institutes that are involved in this area. I name a few: Brookings in Washington, Bruegel in Brussels, Peterson in Washington, a couple in London. The last two are in Tokyo. So there are some sort of fairly heavy weight economic policy research institutes that are dealing in this area. Generally, promoting the same kind of facilitating market leading efficiency, etc. type of thinking that the business groups promote as well. You do have some, though, think tanks. NEF in the small letters is the New Economics Foundation in London, and some others who actually try to promote alternative ideas about finance and its regulation. Then there are the NGOs. Some NGOs that actually focus on finance. But, you know, that's about the whole list there. There's not that many. So Tax Justice Network, you might have heard of. New Rules for Global Finance Coalition, very good, but very small. Europeans for financial reform, Americans for financial reform. You might have heard about the debt networks that were promoting the cancellation of debt in poor countries in the 1980s, 1990s, and 2000s. But, you know, there's not that many. It's not that many. Certainly not that many compared to the previous two lists, and especially the first one. You do have other civil society groups, NGOs. You do have other NGOs who will look at financial issues, amongst other things, and Peter's organization would be one of those, where there will be projects and project officers that will look at finance from time to time. A number of these groups have promoted the financial transactions tax. A number of them have promoted the shutting down of offshore finance centers. Several have looked at recently at speculation in food and land by financial markets. But this is mostly small-scale stuff. It's mostly one and two project officers and individual NGOs, and it tends to come and go and not be very consistent over time. Peter's work in Weed duly acknowledged as an exception. The labor movement. Apologies to any trade unionists in the room, but really on finance, it's kind of ritualistic, rhetorical declarations that are issued ahead of every meeting of the Financial Stability Board. At least they know the Financial Stability Board exists, so that's good. But and meeting every time the IMF, it's to say, and you can kind of read these declarations and the sort of re-editions of the same speech, sort of year after year. I'm not being fair, but I've just read quite a few of them over 20 years, and it doesn't seem to be going too much. Anyway, not much mobilization. Uni Global Union is the global union covering the banking sector, but its interest is mainly the interest of its members, of course, and not so much on the regulation of the industry as a whole. Grassroots mobilizations. So we do have this on some scale. Jubilee 2000 is a debt relief campaign. It was quite big, got a lot of people moving. Attac, certainly in its early years, and especially in places like France, had quite a following. 35,000 members of Attac, I think, at one point. You get street protests at the meetings of the IMF, the World Bank, the G20, from time to time, the G8, and then Occupy, the Ignorados, and so on, Blockupy in Frankfurt. Now, this is all of some size, but not very sustained. And it's not clear of what consequence in terms of actually bringing about changes in rules. And one of the things that I want to say also is that there's not tends not to be too much joined up business between these activities and the others. So the NGOs are kind of doing their active NGOs and social movements, the grassroots activism, often have great difficulty coordinating with one another. So that's part of the reason why you don't get a good critical mass of activity. Okay, but that's it. That survey, I think, is fair. I don't think I've missed anything. So there is some activity. You would be surprised if global finance did not have some activity, but it's not very much on the whole. And it hasn't had all that much impact. Debt cancellation has been an impact. That the financial transactions tax has now made some movement forward is an impact, though I'm not sure that governments are doing it because of civil society pressure. The civil society people were saying, let's have a financial transactions tax in order to create resources for global public goods. Now the governments in the global north say, let's have a financial transaction tax so we can get some of the money back that we paid to the banks, which is a rather different rationale. Okay, some modest reforms of financial governance institutions, a few votes from Europe to China in the IMF, but I wouldn't say that this has changed the nature of global finance. So I come back to my puzzle again. Why? Why is it? I gave you those numbers. They're huge. I gave you the consequences. They're obvious. And yet, why don't we get more mobilization of citizens on financial markets? So, I don't have easy explanations. That's part of my problem as an academic, but it keeps me busy. I think some of the circumstances are related to actors, in other words, the individuals, the associations, the actors involved in these markets. But also, I want to point out some structural forces. Some of them to do with hierarchies, social hierarchies of class, of race, etc. Finance, capital's power, and neoliberal discourse. So, questions on actor circumstances. Part of the problem about mobilizing civil society on financial markets is the secrecy of the sector. It's a bit hard to mobilize people if they can't see what they're trying to mobilize. It's a bit like my question to you about the Financial Stability Board. A good part of the reason why you haven't heard of the Financial Stability Board is because it isn't particularly interested in you knowing that it's there. And it's quite difficult. I mean, they do have a website, actually, so you can, once you leave, and you can see how you raise their hits in one day by three times or something. And they'll wonder, why are all these people from Duisburg? Okay. But most of it's very much behind the scenes. If you take the International Monetary Fund over the last 20 years or so has disclosed a lot. We know a lot about the International Monetary Fund now that we didn't know before. But that's what shows how little we know about the others, because the IMF is really the exception in that regard. Of course, the financial firms themselves don't often disclose very much of what they do. You can look up on your Wikipedia shadow banking if you want to have another example of something that's very secret and it's very difficult to follow and track. And a lot of this stuff, when you do find it, you can't understand the language that they're speaking. So you think you're being informed, but you can't understand half of the sentences. So then that makes it difficult. So again, hard to mobilize activism when the object of that activism is very elusive. Okay, that for me is a first reason. Second reason, public ignorance. And again, it's not public stupidity, yes? I'm not accusing anyone of being stupid, but I'm saying it's very difficult. We don't know what's going on. One is that people come in with outdated notions of the real economy. It's like it hasn't quite sort of stuck in the mind yet that the economy has really changed with financialization. People are still kind of approaching the economy thinking that it's about goods and services and that's kind of what it's about, and finance kind of adds a little bit of grease into the wheels of goods and services. No, finance is the economy in many areas, and the people haven't quite got there with that. And I've known people in the financial markets who tell me that they get even economists coming from the universities with their degrees in economics, and the first thing they do is re-educate them. Because the economics that they're bringing from the universities is an outdated one that hasn't caught up with financialization. So that's a problem. Outdated notions of statist governance. By that I mean that many people, when they think the rules for the financial markets, they must come from governments. They must come from nation states. But in fact, many, many, many of the rules for financial markets do not come from nation states, or do not come from nation states as traditionally understood. They can come from transgovernmental networks like the G20, where officials quietly behind the scenes get together and make various deals about financial regulation. But they also happen in OECD committees, obscure back alley committees in Paris at the OECD. A lot of the regulation is actually coming from private sites. So did the same five people who knew the Financial Stability Board, they also know the International Accounting Standards Board, probably? Did you know the Hedge Fund Standards Board? Didn't know hedge funds had standards, huh? Yeah. Well, they do. The Hedge Fund Standards Board tells us they do. Its own standards, one has to add. Okay, International Capital Markets Association, the credit rating agencies, there are a lot of private regulators in the financial field. So there's a lot of rules. Sometimes people say, finance isn't regulated. There's a lot of regulation, but it just doesn't come from the place where you expect it. But that, again, is public ignorance in a way. How do you mobilize? How do you mobilize civil society, who, by my definition, is trying to shape the rules governing society? But if they don't know where the rules are coming from, then it's a little bit difficult to mobilize very effectively. So you will not find campaigns on the Financial Stability Board. You will not find campaigns on the International Accounting Standards Board. You will not find campaigns on the Hedge Fund Standards Board, etc. A little bit on the G20, but that's also not very much relative to what you might expect. So, difficulties of public awareness. Difficulties of awareness within civil society itself. I spoke a couple of days ago to a meeting of debt and development campaigners who specialize on this financial stuff, and I asked them the same sort of questions as you, and not many more hands went up, to be honest. So again, even within the civil society area, I mean, there will be people like Peter, like Jo-Marie Griesgraber, and I could name fairly small numbers of people who've really stuck at this for a long time and who really know their stuff on the financial markets. But it's a fairly small population. Again, not because people are stupid, but also this last point. A lot of civil society activity, especially the more organized civil society activity, is dependent on funds, is dependent on grants, and so on. And the foundations and the like, which often provide a lot of this support, or the governments, they don't provide money for advocacy in this area. Human rights, yes, go for it. Big plans, big money, big projects. But if you go for financial markets, it tends not to attract the same So that leaves a lot of the civil society groups with not many material capabilities to undertake these campaigns. Yeah, not much staff, not much money, not much office space, not much computer capacity, whatever. So the funding levels are low, except for the business forums, of course. If you go to the annual meeting of the Institute of International Finance, you're in for a nice, nice party. But not really for these others. I don't think they will even hold a party. Another problem, though, for the groups, I mentioned it a bit earlier, coalitions. You can imagine you have a lot of civil society groups. They may have one or two people that are working on financial issues. They're very disparate. They're very disconnected and fragmented. They could develop coalitions. When they developed coalitions on the debt campaign, it had real results. When they developed coalitions on the financial transactions tax, again, with time, it has had some results. But a lot of this individual work on tax havens or illicit flows or food and land, commodity speculation and so on, it doesn't really get that far as long as it stays so fragmented. So that's a problem. And also, along the governance side, a lot of these institutions, like the Financial Stability Board, the Bank for International Settlements and so on, they're not equipped to engage with civil society. The World Bank is very good. World Bank has got 120 staff people to engage with civil society groups, 120. So it's quite a lot. So if you are a civil society group and you want to talk to the World Bank, there's a queue of people waiting to talk with you. In fact, it's probably oversupply in some sense. And maybe there's too many of them, because what happens is the civil society people go off to talk to the World Bank when they shouldn't be talking there. They should be talking somewhere else. Maybe that's a clever ploy, I'm not sure. But in any case, these other institutions do not, and that makes it difficult. Okay, that's a number of the actor sort of related things. But I also wanted to suggest that some of the problems for this engagement of civil society with financial markets is deeper than just the actor attributes. In other words, the resources they have, the characteristics that they have. Some of it is much more deeply seated. I mean, part of it is that if you look at the financial markets, power is deeply invested in those financial markets. You know, elites in the global north, in the culturally Western circles, and the property classes. Dare I say it has racial and gender dimensions too, but anyway, there's a really concentrated power which is not terribly interested to see the financial markets change. Remember, there's that 245-1, but that one consists of some very powerful and powerfully placed people, and that's difficult to budge. So you have handfuls of public interest civil society groups that are up against deeply embedded class, country, racial, and other social hierarchies. And it takes more than a few people with a few couple of projects to move those kinds of structures. The other thing I'd kind of say, though, is that if you look at the civil society activism and you look at its profile, then it too, the civil society that mobilizes on financial markets, in as much as it does exist, it too is largely northern-based. It too is largely property classes. It too is largely white and a good deal male. I'm not saying that these people don't have social change on their mind, although one of them did say to me yesterday, "You mean NGOs are supposed to be agents for change?" This is the leader of one of these groups, but anyway. But it just make it makes it makes you it makes you wonder a little bit: are the structural interests of this civil society a bit too closely aligned with the structural interests of those who are happy to see financial markets still continue as they are? It's a little bit of a provocative thing to say, but if you wanted real resistance and real insistent resistance on financial markets, maybe you'd have to go to the subaltern circles, who are actually totally locked out. The underclasses, the people of color, the disenfranchised women, and so on. And if you could get them to mobilize on financial markets, they might be a little bit more insistent than my NGO friend. Are we supposed to be agents of change? That's fine. Deep power of finance capital as well. The workings of capitalism today are so deeply bound with the financial markets. So much of the accumulation, so much of the profit is taken in the financial markets, that really to dent the financial markets is to make major dents in actual capitalism itself today. So that is a very, very hard nut to crack. When you're taking on the financial markets, in a way, you're taking on capitalism. And that's a pretty big force. And finance capital has its backers in the real economy, where real business still does take money from finance, from that 1% of the, or that two, that one as against the 245, which is dependent very much on finance capital, giving it its returns. And then political parties, which are often highly financed by these areas, religious institutions, which are also investing in the markets, other elite interests, including the foundations. So I don't think foundations actually explicitly come out and say, we're not going to fund work on financial markets because that's actually going to put critical scrutiny on our own endowments. But the foundations don't. I don't know. I've in some further research that I would do on this, I would really like to sit across from foundation people and say, is there anything in this that you might be reluctant to have scrutiny of your own nest? Anyway, who knows? I wonder too. A number of the civil society professionals. Again, you don't go up to an activist and say, are you a little bit timid on financial markets because you're actually depending on your own pension coming out of this? But I don't know. That's again why I just wonder about some subaltern resistance, if you didn't get more of that, where there's no stake, that there would be less inhibited activism and mobilization. But of course, nobody funds that. Along with those, if you like, material interests of finance capital, there's also this power. The power of a particular way, the common sense of way of thinking about economy these days. And here maybe there's a division in this room between those that were born before and after 1990 or so. 1985 maybe. 1980, okay, 1980, make it 1980. This fellow who said, oh, are NGOs meant to be agents of change? He was born after 1980. There is a generation that has grown up with the common sense that there is no alternative to capitalism in organizing an economy, that's how you do a modern economy, that free markets are the best thing, that they will generate efficiency, growth, prosperity, etc. And there's a kind of language that just goes around and that assumes that finance is part of this. The efficient market hypothesis underlies all this financial stuff. And people are just, they just believe this. And if this is a mindset and if this is a truth that is embedded in people's minds, it's kind of hard to overcome that and say, actually, this finance isn't terribly efficient. Creating all these crises and volatilities, and we're having all these unemployments, and my pension fund has just been taken away, my house has been foreclosed, it's not very efficient, actually it's rather painful. But you can have these sort of experiences, but still you're confronted by a language which the mass media is telling you each day, and which your classes are being told in your university, in your school, and your politicians, and everyone is speaking this happy discourse about that it's all fine. Anyway, that's a mental block that is awfully hard to get through. What's interesting actually also is the neoliberal discourse in the civil society groups themselves, when they too have internalized a lot of this and are very cautious about taking the step over the efficiency barrier to say something else. Okay, so part of why you want to have an explanation, at least in my modestly action-oriented research, is because you want that explanation to feed into what you might do differently. Because if it's the case that these financial markets are so big, are so influential, and have many influences that we'd rather see differently, then, and the civil society is one of the places where we could get some energy for change, then we might want to ask, well, how could we get more civil society mobilization on finance? And then the answer or the core to that would lie in the explanation for the lack of it so far. So what would we need if we wanted to have more civil society engagement of financial markets? Well, partly we would need the firms and governance bodies in the finance sector to be more open, to be more visible, to be more less secretive, less hidden. And we would also need them to be transparent in a way that's effectively transparent. In other words, where you don't need a PhD in economics to figure out, or some kind of accounting tricks, diploma to understand what's being said. There would need to be a lot more public education about financialization and financial sector governance. I guess in my own modest way, this talk is supposed to be, is kind of part of that. But it needs to be done by a lot more and on a lot greater scale. It needs to be in schools, it needs to be in the mass media, it needs to be in universities. It needs to be civil society doing this kind of work itself. I know that for a lot of civil society groups, it's far more, you know, sexy to rub shoulders with people in power in the corridors of Berlin and London and so on. But actually, a lot of the work could better be done by relating with publics and having good communication. For mobilization later. Better training of the activists, at least those not as well developed as and experienced as that limited few. Get the funders to provide more for this. Yes, environmental issues are. Yes, climate is very important. Yes, human rights are really important. But this is also important. And I would even argue for some redistribution of resources just to balance that out a bit more. Better coalitions by civil society groups. Less of this fragmented work. More collective work. More collective work north and south. Cross north-south divisions, get civil society bodies to actors to go to a lot of these business forums and actually infiltrate there and start making a bit of counter arguments in such places might also help. I mentioned that the Financial Stability Board and others didn't have any arrangements at the moment for engaging with civil society, whereas the World Bank does. Well, maybe the World Bank could let go of a few of its civil society liaison officers and they could be attached to the FSB instead. And that might that sort of thing might help. And the financial firms themselves could also learn. I mean, the large mining companies, a number of the large other real economy multinationals do have large public affairs divisions and they spend a lot of their time relating to publics. The financial firms do not. They could certainly help out by creating apparatus for that on their part. On the question of those social hierarchies, I was mentioning that so many of the unders don't have much voice in the activism so far. And I would say give more space, more recognition, more respect, more voice, more influence for those who tend not to be heard in the activism today. Because I think in many ways such groups and such circles have much more at stake in many ways and also don't have the patience and are much, as I say, probably more likely to push forward to more substantial changes. And they could do with more resources as well. A little less resources for our northern NGOs and northern trade unions and etc. Maybe a bit more in the hands of those who have less. Better appreciation of how important finance is. And see if you can get through a day where you check yourself the whole day and check each time a neoliberal formulation is going through your mind. And see how infused with a particular way of thinking about economy and society you are. And then imagine critically going through your civil society work, if that's what you do, with that kind of more alert, self-critical regard in terms of your own language and your own thinking. I suspect that we need civil society groups to do a lot of that in order to have a different understanding of the reality that they're working with. Thank you very much.
Das war der Politikwissenschaftler Jan Art Scholte über fehlendes soziales Engagement zur Regulierung der internationalen Finanzströme. Scholte hat seinen Vortrag am 5. Juni 2013 im Käthe-Hamburger Kolleg in Duisburg gehalten.
D-Radio Wissen. Hörsaal.